The following recording is a production of Critical Studies in Media Communication, a publication of the National Communication Association and distributed by Taylor and Francis under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. For more information about this audio recording and Critical Studies in Media Communication, please visit Taylor and Francis at www.tandfonline.com. For this installment of the podcast, and a few others, we're trying something a little bit different. We've asked the reviewer to end their review with a few questions for the book's author. Once the review was accepted for publication, we then contacted the author and solicited responses to those questions.
Digital Currents, How Technology and the Public Are Shaping TV News by Raina Bivens. Published by University of Toronto Press, 2014. Review and audio recording by Luke Gaspard, RMIT University. The ever-increasing ubiquity and pervasiveness of digital technology as part of the everyday dramatically impacts the way in which we share, produce, and play with media. As a consequence of the agency achieved by the affordances of these technologies, fundamental changes take place in traditional conceptions between audience and producer. How television news production processes have responded to these shifts, alongside the ability for digital media tools to be incorporated into the ongoing cycle of news curation and presentation, are the two central themes Raina Bivens tackles in her book Digital Currents, How Technology and the Public Are Shaping TV News. Building upon a sociological perspective to the production of news, Bivens seeks to provide a new perception of news construction beyond the constraining models of social organization and social construction that previous research within these approaches have tended toward. In the second chapter of her book, Constraining News Production, The View from the 20th Century, whilst incorporating a wider review of this literature addressing the sociology of news, space is also set to look beyond this restrictive frame. Principally achieved through engagement with work by Edward Epstein, Peter Golden and Philip Elliott, as well as Brian McNair, fertile ground is laid for the enlightened updated analysis of production practices presented throughout the book's subsequent course. In the meantime, however, this chapter principally discusses how varied ideological and organizational factors are perceived as constraining journalist independence within a control paradigm. For example, embodied professional norms, practices, and values, as well as internal company directives, all serve to establish common understanding of what can be perceived as being newsworthy. Alongside this, logistical and economic pressures determine how and where resources, both human and technical, can be assigned against continually competing demands for effective allocation. Taking journalists as social actors who play a key role in news production, Bivens focuses on the everyday practices and opinions of these professionals as they navigate and work within this system of constraints. Thus, as she describes it, one of the primary goals of this book, and I quote, is to shed light on the range of autonomy potentially accessible by journalists within their daily routines while exploring the power of the constraining factors highlighted by the traditional narrative of journalist practice. Helping to illuminate these tensions between system constraint and the possibilities for autonomy digital media tools may afford, Bivens in Chapter 3 develops what she describes as a technology autonomy constraint model. Drawing upon an ethnographic analysis advocated by Simon Cottle that calls for an emphasis upon practice over data routine, this model is less a depiction of reality but more a description of the ideal potential that could be achieved via digital technology. Thus, the potentialities of possible technology use can be effective across the whole production cycle of television news. Whether within the confines of the newsroom or out in the field, with research and the transmission of news, as well as the circulation of news amongst its audience via social media, technology possesses the ability to be impactful across all phases of news production. Taking account of observations from 8 television newsrooms across Canada and the United Kingdom, plus interview data obtained from 124 practicing journalists plying their trade in both publicly and private finance news organizations within these countries. It is less within the phase of news selection and assignment where Bivins addresses the impact of digital media, but more within the spaces of news intake and where news is gathered, written, and transmitted. Although the details for these conclusions are teased out in much greater detail within the book's three core chapters, chapters 4, 5, and 6, attention is drawn to how even within these three distinct phases, there are variances to potential to both facilitate and restrain the work of journalists as they operate within the system of organizational power dynamics. Helping to set the theoretical context for these shifting positions digital technology can hold within this productive landscape, Bivins draws upon the condition of liquid modernity as a means of understanding these divergent relationships. In this context, the power dynamics that characterize the very nature of institutions, such as that of news organizations, contest to varying degrees the wider shifts taking place in society. Therefore, the ability for technological innovation to pass between these different phases is absorbed to different levels from the everyday practice of journalists, whilst at the same time there is stability to the norms and values these professionals draw upon. Throughout the remainder of this book, this contestation between established practices and news opportunities are made abundantly clear as focus turns to close examination of the three phases of news production. Within the first of these, Chapter 4, Intake Phase, Information Producers and News Flows, prime examples are provided to this conflation of structure, agency and technology, where the result is a more balanced ratio between autonomy and constraint. A case in point can be seen where technology offers the possibility of greater democratization within the newsroom. With news feeds being more widely accessible and available at any terminal possessing the appropriate software, there is a dispensation of a gatekeeping role traditionally performed by a single copy taster. The result of which is an ability of a wider range of journalists to identify stories that have gone unnoticed within an organization's general intake and selection processes, offering the possibilities that these will become cued for further exploration. Conversely, Bivins also points to how the inherent push of the organizational structure dictates there's a certain level of predictability to the way in which journalists conduct their work. With this in mind, attention is drawn to the value of established routines, institutional diaries and pre-planned events, reliance on news agencies and key sources, particularly those of government and other institutions, as all retaining primary importance to how journalists conduct their work. With the ongoing need to fill airtime and meet deadlines, the symbiotic relationship between the institution of news and those relied upon established actors reinforces this codependency. While Chapter 5 serves to reinforce the push and pull of autonomy and control during the selection and assignment phase of news production, the following chapter, News Gathering, Story Writing and Transmission Phases, provides an excellent encapsulation to how divergent digital technology can be utilized in regard to understanding journalistic autonomy. Through Bivins' observations, she acknowledges how journalists value the increased ability to film stories on location due to the decreasing cost of the appropriate technology. Similarly, digital media facilitates increased speeds to the way in which this footage can be uploaded and processed into an organization's workflow, providing for a wider and more dynamic utilization of this material throughout an organization and across its affiliates. However, due to this heightened ability to more quickly prepare the prized asset for a visual medium, journalists encounter negative repercussions through these technological benefits. As a consequence, greater emphasis is placed on immediacy as an attended-to news value, whereby the ability of appearing live and present at the transmission of events becomes increasingly prized within managerial concerns towards the allocation of resources. Hence, the time of frontline journalists becomes increasingly preoccupied with the actual shooting and presentation of news, rather than the ability to engage in the process of pursuing leads and news gathering. Bivins concludes, this changing environment is one where, and I quote, journalists have overwhelmingly expressed their dissatisfaction with the increasing quality of live coverage, and particularly the quality of resulting news, as there becomes an over-reliance on the news wires and recycled reports from other news organizations in a peer-to-peer instantly authoritative. Later in this chapter, however, Bivins also accounts for how some journalists take a much more positive stance towards technologies incorporated into their everyday work patterns. In this context, the ability of the public to capture images from breaking news events and transmit these via mobile phones and other devices contributes to the presentation of stories in ways that would never have been possible in previous journalistic eras. Similarly, the exchange facilitated via social networking services, most notably Twitter, as well as other sites such as Pinterest, LinkedIn and YouTube, allows these to perform the function of a personal newswire service. In doing so, this facilitates the circulation of connections and the stimulation of leads, fostering the possibility of a stronger engagement with unconventional actors than previously achievable. Additionally, due to the change in a one-to-many frame of communication that typically characterized a journalistic audience relationship, the commonplace of digital tools within the hands of the public offers significant opportunities for two-way communications. Where consumer engagement and contribution is encouraged, this provides news consumers with the opportunity for participation in feedback loops which facilitate the ability to amplify, extend, comment, and annotate a journalist's writing. For Bevins, journalist blogs, otherwise known as J-blogs, are seen as prime examples of how technology can offer the greatest levels of journalistic autonomy she encounters. In many instances, professionals are able to publish directly to a blog without organizational interference, further stimulating the ability to participate directly with an audience. In conclusion, digital currents presents an impressive narrative to the way in which television news production has responded to the increased presence of digital technology within the differing contexts of its creation. Following a clear trajectory from traditional television production practices, Bevin sets out how digital technologies offer both opportunity and constraint to the practice of contemporary journalists within the context of organizational factors and controls. While these developments offer uneven benefits across the free production phase of news presentations, she also points out how audiences' direct participation increasingly offers the possibility of extending previously established norms and routines. In doing so, this offers participation to a greater range of voices in the creation of television news. However, as Bivins is quick to point out, the ability for technology to facilitate new forms of engagement and working practices does not overshadow how the social institutions of journalism contest these ongoing changes as it seeks to preserve its own well-established values, practices, and ideology. Questions do arise, however, to how these tensions manifest in news institutions operate within differing funding models. For example, do public service broadcasters, like those of the BBC, who have tended towards technological innovation quicker than private institutions, continue to embrace technological change differently? And if so, is this due to their public service remits or as a consequence of becoming increasingly commercialized? Or has the differentiation that once separated the nature of these institutions in relation to a public interest become increasingly eradicated as market pressures further come to bear on their ability to survive in the marketplace?
This is Rena Bivens reading my response to Luke Gaspard's review of my book, Digital Currents: How Technology and the Public Are Shaping TV News. Luke Gaspard offered a thoughtful and helpful summary of the main arguments presented in my book before raising important questions related to the differences between public and private news broadcasters. I appreciate Gaspard's push to consider these specific contexts further. Gaspard asks whether the tensions between opportunities and constraints that journalists deal with in their everyday practice manifest differently depending on the funding model of the news institution. This is especially interesting in light of contemporary shifts within the public-private divide that see public service broadcasters under increasing pressure to justify their funding models to governments who have traditionally supported them. These debates are hardly over. Here in Canada, a 2015 parliamentary report recommended that CBC Radio Canada move towards minimizing their dependence on government funds, while also seriously considering incorporating commercial advertising. This was seen by many as a market-driven agenda. It was also understood as a highly politicized consultation process. Since the majority of senators who took part in the committee were conservative members, many concluded they were merely supporting the views of then Prime Minister Stephen Harper, also a conservative, who was not in favor of committing large sums of money to support the public broadcaster. In fact, One member of the committee, Liberal Senator Art Eggleton, publicly denounced the report and issued his own minority report, which supported an increase in public funding of the CBC. This conflict is emblematic of the complex politics that public service broadcasters must navigate. With a shift accompanying current Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's Liberal government, Canada is currently undergoing a comprehensive review of Canadian broadcast arts and culture policy. This is a much broader scope than the 2015 report, but the CBC's future is still intimately tied to these policies. So, while funding models for public service broadcasters are important to consider, they too are in flux, tied to the shifting political preferences of those currently in power. Indeed, Gaspard also gestures to these fluctuations, noting the increasing pressures to commercialize and the subsequent eradication of a public interest mandate. Yet, Gaspard is wondering how these shifts conspire to influence the tensions that I explore in my book. These tensions revolve around the increasing adoption of digital technologies by both journalists and the public, alongside organizational structures that continue to constrain journalism practice. Ultimately, these organizational constraints were read in the context of an industry that was reacting defensively to emerging debates of the time, many of which centered around the opportunities afforded by user-generated content and citizen journalism. In the confines of my book, I didn't specifically explore the link between the embrace of technological developments and the funding models of the institutions. My main aim was to consider these tensions in the context of journalism practice. Broadly speaking, but with an emphasis on providing a view from the lower decks, I offered the perspectives of journalists at the bottom of the hierarchy in context with those from the upper echelons of their organizations. This framing was important since I was dealing most directly with the constraint-based narrative that still held sway within sociological analyses of television news production. As a result, I worked to tease out the agency potentially available to journalists while navigating the power that is wielded by those who make the technological purchasing decisions and policies that impact journalists' practice on the ground. Since public service broadcasters have a stake in identifying and clarifying their value in a way that may arguably differ from private institutions, one would expect such an investment to be reflected in their decisions regarding technological purchases and policies. Appealing to the value of their public interest mandate, for instance, one could imagine a broadcaster that depends on public funds eagerly integrating technologies that permit them, at least the appearance, of engaging with a broad swath of the public. Yet such a motivation would have to coexist with the prevailing professional ideology deeply embraced by journalists, which will ultimately set limits on any digital technologies in the service of securing the boundaries drawn around the profession of journalism. And it is this occupational ideology that was deployed as a preservation mechanism, regardless of the private-public distinction, as I explored in my concluding chapter. From this perspective, while there are some differences in technological adoption rates, private and public institutions are competing both with one another and with the growing availability of alternative news gathering and reporting options that are widely seen with suspicion by journalists who continue to be invested in the professional versus amateur divide. That said, Gaspard's inquiries are certainly worthy of further research. Finally, while private versus public funding models influence the flexibility of an institution's budget and can determine technological purchases, expenses differ so dramatically that it is important to consider the specific adoption trajectories of the technologies in question. Journalists' use of particular technologies depends on whether they can initially adopt them at their own discretion, for example, social media, or whether top-down financial investment is required, for example, satellite technologies, and the internal power relations that shape journalists' use tend to mimic these adoption trajectories. Overall, then, we must consider the complex interplay of various forces if we are to evaluate the relationship between journalism, technology, and society. This includes, but is certainly not limited to, technological affordances, internal and external power relations, political and economic contexts, journalism practice, and the strategic deployment of professional ideology. Thanks for listening.